So this is for Catherine, my wife, and for Jessica. And these are my most boring brushes with fame. I've realized tonight they are very East Coast Gen X centered. So hopefully enough of you will enjoy and know. All right, so I never met Lou Reed. He's one of my heroes. I was in several bands and been a songwriter. I had a chance to meet Lou Reed. One of my girlfriends was a DJ out of Norfolk on the alternative station. And so she would get me into a lot of shows, and I would have a chance to meet people backstage. And Lou Reed was one of them, and she knew that he was my hero. And asked, like, okay, it's after the show. Do you want to go back and meet Lou? And I thought about it, and I thought about a lot that's here. And I said, no, absolutely not. There's no way. She was very surprised, but she could tell I was serious. So my first brush with fame was with a local singer in Norfolk who was in the biggest local band at the time. We were just about to make it big. And they were called the Waxing Poetics. All right. So David Milton was a singer. And I was about to start a band, probably for like 2 years, about to start a band with my friends. So we would unload on what the band was going to be like on anybody we could talk to. And we came across David Milton after one of his shows, and I knew that he was big in the scene. So I started telling him about my band and how it was going to be great and the concepts and what we're going to do and how it's going to stage. And David Milton started a theme that has gone through my entire life. He turned away while I was talking and just went, go to hell, go to hell, go to hell. I think he was very tired. It was after the show. Later that year, I met Pat D'Anizio, who's the singer for the band Smithereens, in the Strand bookstore. Just ran into him one of the corners. He was in there looking at books. And I was so flustered and very earnest, which is part of the problem I have, I think, with talking to celebrities, is I just explode on them. And so I was like, you're the Love and Roses guy, Love and Roses, Guns N' Roses, you're the Guns N' Roses guy. And he's in the corner with his book, and he just sighs. And then he goes, Jesus Christ, I just want to buy a book. Walks off. I attempted to be a reporter for my college station, ODU. My first assignment was to interview a poet who was visiting. It turned out it was Amiri Baraka, who, I don't know if you know who Amiri Baraka is, but he is a firecracker. And I had no idea who he was. I was 18 years old. All I knew was that he had a new book out. So after he had done his reading and done his talk, I'm sitting on stage trying to interview him before he goes out into the hall to talk. Everybody's waiting for him. And I'm just asking questions like, so I understand you wrote a book. What's the book about? And he holds up the book, and it's the autobiography of Amiri Baraka. He had this great look. He would go, I think he thought I was joking him, and then after a while he realized I was not joking him. I just had no idea what I was talking about. And this is one of the most awesome things I ever saw. He got tired of all my stupid questions, picked up his back of books off the table, stood up, started reading one of his poems, which very quickly ended with, this was 1984, very quickly ended with, death to Reagan! Death to Reagan! Death to Reagan! Death to Reagan! And went out the back of the hall chanting that with a bunch of students following him. It was amazing. But still, celebrity just directly walking away from me. I met Danny Elfman from Oingo Boingo backstage one time and told him my usual, like, I'm so excited because you're the best and I love your band and I know you're from the West Coast. Danny Elfman's a very shy person, so he was kind, but it was still, he nodded a lot. And then he finally went, and just walked away. But I was told that he does that a lot. He's very shy. My first band recorded their first single with Kim Fowley, because I am that old. I don't know if you know who Kim Fowley was. He was the manager for the Runaways, manager for Kiss at some time, Helen Reddy. He's an incredibly disgusting creature. So after we record in the studio, he's like glomming onto us with his oozing personality. And he decides he's going to categorize all of us, and we're going to feel honored because he's telling us who we are. It's like, you're the mafia guy in the band. You do all the money. You got the finances. You're the princess. Yeah, you're the princess. You're the star of the show. And he goes down the whole band. It gets to me. I was the singer of the band. He gets to me and he goes, I don't know what you are. That one kind of hurt. Another Kim I met was Kim Deal to Pixies at a Northampton music festival. Me and two other people in my band saw her and the guitar player, Joey Santiago, and we ran up to her in our gear because we were on tour. She saw us coming from 50 yards away. Kim Deal like puts down her drink, looks at Joey Santiago and goes, "Stop! You have 30 seconds." They tried to talk to her. She was not having it. I just sort of disappeared like Homer Simpson behind them. Like, turned back around. She had a lot of energy. I almost met Michael Hutchence, except he was being dragged past me backstage, completely unconscious, with his feet dragging on the stage. They took him behind some curtain in the back area at Hampton Coliseum. 15 minutes later, he's performing on stage. I have no idea how that works or what happened. I got to meet the Cramp singer, Lux Interior, one of my heroes. But unfortunately, when I met him backstage, I had brought my record store boss with me, who jumped in and wanted to talk to him. And I had seen the Cramps many times in his life. He's like 10 years older than me. Immediately tells Lux Interior, who's like 6'3". I don't know if you know who Lux Interior is. He kind of looks like Lurch from the Munsters. Or is it the Addams Family? Addams Family. Except he's commonly wearing nothing but a bikini or pants that are like pulled down on his thighs. My boss immediately tells Lux Interior, "I saw you in 1979 after you played the Asylum, and you guys were much better then. It was a much wilder show. This show just wasn't that wild tonight, you know what I mean?" And Lux Interior goes, "Well, that wasn't very nice." I didn't even get to talk to him. I met James Gandolfini, came out of a diner on the West Side Highway, middle of the day, super bright sun. This giant is standing on the sidewalk as I come out of the diner. I get out of the sun, look at him. It's James Gandolfini. He's got that grin that he has on his face. He's just staring at me. And I was like, here. He goes, "Yeah." And then I look, and there's all this press not even a block away, down on the sidewalk, almost a block away. He was going to be speaking at a labor rally that day with a couple other stars. And I looked at them and I looked at him and I said, "They haven't seen you yet?" And he goes, "They will." And almost right after that, they came running up and swarmed around him. I never even got a chance to talk to him after that. But the worst diss or boring, non-significant meeting was when I finally got to see one of my favorite bands in 1987, Thurston Moore, in Sonic Youth. They were playing at a place called Trax in Charlottesville. Very small club, super packed. They were just becoming like a sort of a giant band. They had not signed to Geffen. That was like 2 years away, but they were getting big. After the two opening bands opened, I ended up on the front of the stage, like right down there, in front of Thurston Moore, so happy. As they come on and start playing, the whole crowd crushes forward. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but if you're at the front of the stage does not move. So you get crushed. And you can feel the danger, like the fear goes in the back of your head, like, I'm going to get crushed. So I end up, like, crawling up on the stage in front of him as they're beginning their songs. Now, I don't know if you know, if you've seen Sonic Youth, but they have a lot of guitars. They literally have like two crates full of guitars, almost like 20 guitars, because they use different tunings for almost every song, and they tune the guitars differently. In the crush, his guitar stands got all knocked over, and at some point near the end of the song, he realizes that. He seems to think that I'm with the club's stage crew. And so as he's going through songs and getting rid of guitars and grabbing other ones, he's handing me guitars for the next song. So I spent like the whole show sitting like this. At the end of the song, he would hand another one. Didn't hear anything of the show because his amp was right there blasting in me. And at the end, he didn't say anything to me. Just went on backstage with the rest of the band. That was my last brush with fame. And so when I got the chance to meet Lou Reed, I was like, absolutely not. I'm not meeting Lou Reed. I cannot. There's no way I can endure that. There's no way. Thank you very much.